Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. What advice would you give your younger self if you had the opportunity? What if you could actually go back in time to influence your younger self to make better decisions than your first go-round? Alessandra Narvaez Varela takes this concept and places it on the U.S.-Mexico border. Narvaez Varela is a poet born and raised in the Mexican border city of Juarez. The central character in the book 30 Talks Weird Love is Ana Maria, a 13-year-old overachiever attending school in Juarez in 1999, a time when women and girls are disappearing or found murdered. The book begins with Ana Maria taking a bathroom break at a movie theater. An adult voice in the stall next door says, "Meet me at the concession stand." That voice belongs to 30. 30 is Ana Maria at age 30. And 30 wants Ana Maria to take her foot off the study pedal and love herself more. 30 also has other motivations that are revealed later in the book. The book unfolds in different forms of verse, kaleidoscopic verse. Narvaez Varela says the book is not a take on 13 going on 30. She says the seed of the idea that grew into 30 Talks Weird Love began with her work with high school students and was inspired by her own experiences. And a note to listeners, our conversation touches on suicide.
Interacting with that age group is really exciting. There's always a surprise. There's always drama, and you always have to be ready for it. More so, coming in as an older person, interacting with teenagers, it's really easy to appreciate how beautiful they are, as cliche as that might sound to them, and try very humbly and sometimes forcefully to make them realize they are perfect by the very fact that they are, well, alive. And so that's how it started. And really, this character who comes from the future, 30, was the first thing I thought about, not so much Ana Maria, because I would see myself as that traveler from the future, trying to help my students realize, again, how beautiful and perfect they were. And then I guess also through that very blessed interaction, I started thinking about my experience as a teenager and the lack of teenagehood, really, in terms of how we usually think about it, right? Even talking about 13 going on 30, how they would have these parties and things like that. And for me, well, it was all about school. Ever since I can remember, you know, the experience of being in school, it was always about doing my homework, being worried about homework, trying to do my best. And what's interesting to me is that I was born like that. My parents never exerted any pressure on me. And actually, to the contrary, they would try to get me to stop. And so that's how these two ideas came together. This visitor from the future interacting with a teenager. And then from there on, the idea of Ana Maria was born. And it's interesting what you bring up about, yes, Ana Maria very much draws from my own experiences. But what I discover throughout the process is that as much as a character might be similar to us, they start developing a will, an independence that's very beautiful to actually discover and sometimes frustrating. Because as the author looking in and having this kind of channel to this other voice, you want to impose your plans. And if you do that, then the story suffers, the character suffers. So little by little, when revising the story, I understood that Ana Maria and I were not twins. We're closely related, but there are differences between us. And going back to the verse helped me discover this in many ways. And the book itself, the reason why it's written in verse, it's because it's drawing in my own comfort zone. I did my MFA here, right here at UTEP, the only bilingual master's in the U.S. And so poetry being the focus of my master's and my thesis, it was home. And then I started to experiment a little bit more. And that's why poetry is so exciting overall. But then when you get into the possibility of telling a story through poetry, you really can go to places that sometimes regular fiction or prose can't. And that's why It's a kaleidoscope of forms, as you said, Norma. And as the book is described, you have, you know, your very run-of-the-mill stanzas, but then you have some poems that are following a shape. Those are called concrete poems or shape poems. As poets, I think we're routinely committed to looking at the whole page as a canvas. So it's really the possibility of poetry on the page is just wonderful. And so when then you inject character, dialogue, setting, then it becomes really a wonder. And so that's why, I guess, in my second project, I haven't been able to let go of the form, precisely because it gives you so many options, so many possibilities. So that's a little bit about how the book came about.
And it's really interesting you say how the word shows up on the page is itself an art form. And I think that's something that is possibly lost in a reading of a poem. You may try to imply where the line breaks are, but you don't really get the full shape of what is intended. When I started reading this book, it didn't take me very long to almost start reading it narrative style, as if there weren't any line breaks. But the one time that I did notice that it was a very poetic and a very sparse poetic art form was when Ana Maria started having dreams. And we kind of need to backtrack. She, at age 13, you know, teenagers are going through some very weird moments mentally, hormonally, etc. So, you know, things are always a little bit of out of whack. But Ana Maria maybe a little more so. And she starts having dreams of dying, almost suicidal dreams. And those are dreams that scare her. And it's those particular poems in this book that I noticed have that very sparse, poetic, almost dreamlike feel to them.
Yes, and that experience of having these death dreams is my own. I deal with depression, and when it really came to a head after a suicide attempt at 17, which luckily I was able to deal with, not with the necessary psychological help, but really just focusing on my work. But life passed me the bill again when I was actually in medical school in Galveston, Texas, and I started seeing imagery in my dreams of dying. And it's very different from what Ana Maria experiences, because most of the times Ana Maria will dream about a knife, right? And I think that with those poems, I was really deliberate in making them, as you say, so sparse and choppy, just to get that feeling to the reader who's reading the book by themselves, that there's a rhythm to this. There's also this very, I don't know how to describe it, even like the motion of the knife and how it would like swish, which is one of the titles. And I really like the challenge to write poems like this that are so minimalistic, that are trying to pack a punch in a couple of lines with a couple of words per line. And I think those might be one of the most difficult personally, while still keeping in mind that this is a story. And the editor, Lee Bird, one of the co-founders and co-owners of Cinco Puntos Press, was very pivotal in that development, because as a poet, and I love the fact that you brought up line breaks, it's like my bread and butter, especially during the semester when I'm teaching Introduction to Creative Writing, I would be obsessed with line breaks. And not only that, but punctuation marks that are so, so vital to creating that rhythm. And I would get obsessed and cut the lines and recut them and change the punctuation marks, because that's who I am by training and I think even by heart. And then Lee Bird would come in and tell me, it's great that you're obsessed with the line cut here, but what about the story? So that's why I really love bringing poetry here and really upholding what makes a poem, because yes, as you said, sometimes when we read it out loud, we might lose certain elements. But really, I'm counting on the reader to, as you did, just think a little bit about why the lines are written this way. And why is it not just go for the regular paragraph or sentence, but it's a really creative, intense process, an editing process, if I may say so, because I was so obsessed with these elements and playing with the page. Then when my editor would mention a change, I'd be like, oh my goodness, because it would move the whole poem. And so I would have to really reconstruct the whole thing. but it really pushes you, poetry overall, to sharpen your use of language, your syntax even. And I think those skills, for those listeners who are more into fiction, those skills, you bring them into prose, because good prose, as I've read it, you should still keep that awareness about rhythm and music and cadence.
And shout out to editors too, right? I mean, same here on our end with radio, because if you don't have a good editor, what you think is a prime product is not going to be one. You really do need those extra set of eyes, or even two sets of eyes.
Absolutely. And I talk to my students about this, and whenever I have the opportunity to talk to an audience, the books that we see in bookstores, most of them, and I don't have a study to quote here, but in my estimation, very humble estimation, I would say like perhaps 99% of them went through a rigorous process of revision with the aid of an editor and a junior editor and a proofreader, so they could take the shape and form that we perceive in bookstores. Because let me tell you, Norma, my first draft was a mess. It really was. And because Cinco Puntos was a local press, very supportive of work like mine, I knew that at least they would give the manuscript a read, which is not always possible with big presses. And so once they actually gave me this opportunity during my first editorial meeting, I thought that Lee Bird was going to say, oh, this is a work of art. Let's stop here. But obviously it didn't happen that way. The meeting, I think, took perhaps 2 hours, and every single page of the manuscript had notes. So really important to give that shout out to editors who act as that outsider, who's maybe looking at those blind spots and really pushing us as artists to present the best shape of a book or what have you. So yes, absolutely. Editors, heart you a lot.
Poet Alessandra Narvaez Varela teaches creative writing at the University of Texas at El Paso. She's the author of 30 Talks Weird Love. When we come back, reflecting and connecting to your past can have implications for one's present and future.
It is really much my goal for readers to really do that exploration of the self, of the past self, in order to connect to the present self and say, what do you want? What do you really want?
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Alessandra Narvaez Varela's debut novel, 30 Talks Weird Love, is a reflection in verse of confronting mental health issues told in a story of time travel on the border. The central character, Ana Maria, is a 13-year-old living in 1999 Ciudad Juarez. She's trying to balance her obsessive need to study to eventually become a doctor with her sometimes tenuous ties to her best friends, with the ever-present threat of danger to the women and girls of Juarez, and with dreams of dying, all which are taking a toll on her mental health. 30 is a 30-year-old time-traveling version of Ana Maria, who's come from the future to try to help the young teen through this precarious moment of her adolescence and to try to change the future. The encounters between 30 and Ana Maria are frustrating, comical, and touching, the way it would probably be if we actually encountered our stubborn younger selves. Alessandra Narvaez Varela says this book was a love letter to the teenage Alessandra, whose life revolved around school and whose own desire was to become a doctor.
And really thinking back, Norma, I played writer, as a lot of writers do, even before I played doctor. Actually, I don't think I ever played doctor. And I still am convinced somehow that if I had taken care of my mental health, if I had spoken to my parents at least, I would have perhaps stayed that route, because I still find science and medicine completely amazing. And that kind of service that you bring to people is unrivaled, really. But I really would have wished to pay attention to those signals. Even when I came to UTEP, UT El Paso, to start my bachelor's degree, I wish that I would take in more classes in English in creative writing department so I could give myself that permission to look around and to consider other avenues. And I think it's also important to mention, though, that I would consider myself a first-generation Mexican-American individual. It's just a career in the arts. It's really not something tangible, not something real. And so it's both a combination of being, in my case, super absorbed with school and having being really obsessed with the goal, but also know in the back of my head that I didn't know any writers or musicians or painters, et cetera, who actually made a living. And it's so important to have that conversation, because even though some of us might already have that goal, there's so many obstacles that impede us from developing that art that we carry with us. So, yes, it is really much my goal for readers to really do that exploration of the self, of the past self, in order to connect to the present self and say, what do you want? What do you really want? Yeah. And it's also a love letter to Ciudad Juárez as well.
Yes. Well, Juárez is sort of the underlying main character in this whole in this whole story, because without Juárez, this story could not have developed. And you point out in this book, and this is something that I don't think people from that are not living on the border would understand, that how could this place where there is so much violence and so much murder, so much misogyny, how can you love such a place? And in this book, Ana Maria writes also a love poem of sorts to Juárez. And even after the unthinkable happens to one of her best friends, she still manages to love Juárez, but that love is different.
Yes. And that's something that that was really difficult to explore, because Juárez, yes, in the headlines, international headlines, and even in U.S. headlines, it's known as this place of blood and violence, femicide, drugs, but it's also home. And when we look at these headlines, so much of what Juárez is and Juarenses is, it's lost. And so throughout the book, Ana Maria is questioning that love, feeling that love. And I often describe it as this roller coaster of sorts where Ana Maria and myself, I do identify with her very, very much. There are times as a Juarense that I feel so much love and so much pride and tenderness for my city because of what it has gone through, because of how it keeps on surviving. And there are moments, very low moments, when I'm afraid of walking its streets, when I really would want for the city to be different, especially because of all this loss of life that obviously in the book is really much focused on the loss of girls and women, but the loss of boys and men as well. It's just a really intense experience. And I think there's also the plateau, I guess, in some way where we do walk numb and try to live by ignoring the next headline about a lost girl or something associated with drug trafficking. However, that's pretty much the message that I want to put out for any city that's being stigmatized unjustly, unfairly, is to write your own experience of the place. Don't let someone else come and tell readers what your home is about. And that is especially the case for Ciudad Juárez. It's a place that if I could choose headlines for Ciudad Juárez, it would be resilience. It would be hard work. Because if you travel to Ciudad Juárez, and as you said, it's not a familiar experience for people who are not from the border. But let's say from here at KTEP and in El Paso, I could get to Juárez. I'm fortunate enough to have the documentation. It would take me, and if I cross one of the bridges by foot, 20 minutes. And then I'm comfortable taking Ubers. And when I do, or when I drive myself, I think that the constant to me when I drive or are being driven by Ubers is that the city is always in motion. You always see students at bus stops. You see people waiting to go places. And it's always moving, always working, and more so just making a life. And I think it's so important to remember that, as well as a lot of border cities, especially on the Mexican side, will suffer the consequences of being the main provider for a demand in the U.S., in this case, of drugs. And so in the case of El Paso and Ciudad Juarez, El Paso is one of the safest cities in the U.S. And I really appreciate that. And it's so fortunate that I was able to make the move, my family as well. But I cannot forget that somehow it is at the expense of Ciudad Juarez. And all of these, you know, dynamics in border cities have to be recognized, I think.
Well, another central point in this book is depression. And you have revealed that you have suffered from depression. Ana Maria, the character, also suffers from depression in a sort of denial. And the character 30 is constantly telling Ana Maria, love yourself, talk to somebody, get out of this school. These, again, seem like words from your future self that you would want to tell your younger self. Can you tell us a little bit about the message that you want readers to take from this story of facing depression and learning how to live with it?
I would think the main goal is to talk to someone that you trust. If you're still not ready to take the step to talk to a mental health specialist, then talk to a trusted person. In the case of young readers, teenagers, young adults, then talk to a trusted adult about this. Just as I talked about Ciudad Juarez and the stigma, to also remove the stigma from mental illness. And I think I'm very encouraged by this generation, which I'm lucky to interact with almost on a daily basis here at the university, that they're so much more open about talking about their experiences with several mental illnesses. And I think that just communication can be the key. And I mention this because the first time that I publicly acknowledged not only dealing with depression, but having attempted suicide was in the classroom. And I don't remember why I brought it up. But since then, I not only mention it in class, but it's part of my first day presentation. And I've noticed that students are so much more comfortable coming to me either in person or through email and telling me, you know what, this is happening and this is why my performance is being affected. And so I would say communication is vital to just normalize this. And again, I'm not in medicine anymore, but one way to think about it that I've read about is we would never shame someone who has cardiovascular disease, for example, right? We would never do that. So why would we shame someone who has issues with, you know, neurotransmitters in their brain, you know, serotonin levels? We would never do that with a heart disease patient. And I think that we're making progress, but in certain communities, and I would say the Mexican and Mexican-American communities, we're still fighting against the stigma and also building that bridge between younger and older generations, because sometimes my students have told me, right, this is a place in the classroom or through a poem where I can talk about this. Because when I've tried to communicate with my parents, they don't know how to do it. And with the best of intentions as well, they might recommend going to church or doing crystal therapy, etc. And I think it's just so important to have those difficult conversations with our parents, with their grandparents, because in their time, and even in mine, I was 13 in 1999, we did not have the language, the vocabulary to say this is what's going on. So I'm just really, again, encouraged by the younger generations, but also the work that we're doing as the older generation to opening up. And I hope that this book encourages both readers, young and adult readers, to open up.
Well, one thing I noticed, and again, the shadow of femicide and violence against women and girls hangs throughout this book. And when I was reading your notes at the end of the book, you had mentioned that there are women who try to keep the memories of the women who are missing, who have been dead, trying to keep those memories alive by repairing black crosses against pink backgrounds. And I noticed as I was reading that the inside cover of your book is pink, and the outer cover is black. And that had to have been intentional.
It was not, actually.
Really?
It was not. And I think you might be the first person to bring it up. I had not thought about it, Norma. No, I think it was a choice from the editor who had taken over when Cinco Puntos got acquired by Lee & Loh Books at New York. But that is just so symbolic and powerful. Oh, my goodness. That is just mind-blowing. But it was important to me to mention that because Las Madres Luchadoras or Madres Buscadoras, mothers who are still fighting for justice or mothers who belong to these groups who are looking for remains. This is a daily struggle for them. And I think it's so compelling and humbling to think about how they face that pain and yet how they fight for their loved ones every day, pretty much.
Do you happen to have the book with you by any chance?
I do, yes.
Would you be able to read an excerpt from the book for us?
Of course, of course. I actually marked this poem in the hopes that maybe I could get to read it. And it's called Girl, and this is on page 159. What is a girl? Her color, her skin, her face, her eyes, her cheeks, her brain, her belly, her mommy, her papi, her money, her anger, her joy, her life, her death? I think not. Girls are not word banks, bullet points, summaries, or headlines. Girls are stories, I think. But will all stories be told? This has me going in mad sad circles because I don't or can't understand. Is it just luck if we can't choose to be born rich and white? Does that turn the unlucky into Bruce Apples who face a dead end life in the trash? This has me spinning in ugly unfair circles with no way out. Not even in biology where a girl is just a mute icon, an O above a hanging cross. Our story's a pen scratch. That's why I use a heart. To feel my pulse and answer, a girl is a human.
You mentioned the O above a hanging cross. That is the symbol of women, of femininity. But this particular poem is drawn with the words inside of it. Can you describe what you did with that poem?
Yes, of course. And it's this is when I started really experimenting with the different forms of poetry. And it's a sort of reversal from another poem that's called I Pray a Poem. That poem is also has the shape. That was the Sacred Heart. And then when revisiting this poem, I sort of, and this was in Word. In Microsoft Word, what I did was actually try to reverse the Sacred Heart and then also think about that symbol given at birth to mark your gender, for example. And then I looked up how some feminists have proposed this. There is a heart on top of the cross. And I'm not describing this so very well, but that is really the process that informed this. And I really love the challenge of having a margin determined by such a powerful symbol of feminists and more so of the fight for gender equality and for the fight against gender-based violence.
Alessandra Narvaez-Varela teaches creative writing at the University of Texas at El Paso. She's the author of 30 Talks Weird Love, a novel told in kaleidoscopic verse. She dedicates the book to the women and girls lost in Juarez. She writes in her introduction, "Poetry doesn't give back life. Poetry is not justice. But she remembers and doesn't let us forget." 30 Talks Weird Love will be released in Spanish in the fall of 2024. The English version is narrated by Narvaez Varela and is available online. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. And thanks to KTEP and El Paso for their production assistance with today's episode. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.